Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Here on Focus, we have been trying to do some programs looking at the impact of the economic downturn here on the country, what that means for working people, what that means for people who have lost their jobs, and what that means for the state and federal government. And this morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about Medicaid. Now, this is the program that provides health and long-term care coverage to over 59 million Americans. It's a program that is jointly funded by the states and the federal government. And with the economic downturn, more and more people have been looking for help as far as medical care is concerned, and that has put increasing pressure on state budgets. In fact, in many states, they have said that without more federal money, they simply cannot meet the need. And there are places that have dealt with the increasing need by cutting back on the kind of services that they provide. We will talk this morning in this part of Focus about the economics of Medicaid, perhaps get into some other areas that have to do with health care as well, but that's the place that we will start. And we have as our guests this morning two economists, both of them affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Our guests are Anthony Lasasso and Robert Kessner. Anthony Lasasso is associate professor and senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the U of I Chicago School of Public Health. Robert Kessner, he's professor in the U of I Chicago's Department of Economics. He's also a research associate for the National Bureau of Economic Research. And both of them have written on the economics of Medicaid, and they're both joining us this morning by telephone. So as we talk, questions are certainly welcome from people who are listening. All we ask of callers is that people just try to keep their questions brief so that we can get as many callers in as possible, but certainly questions are welcome, and I know that the guest will make their best response to whatever people have on their minds. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions are certainly welcome. Well, Professor Lasasso, hello.
Yes. Hi, David. Great to be here.
And Professor Kessner, hello to you.
Hi, David.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us. We certainly appreciate it. And as we talk here, you guys can pass things back and forth. I don't know if the particular questions will appeal to one or the other, but you're certainly both welcome to weigh in, and particularly when we get to questions from people who are listening, we hope we will have some questions there again. You know, either one or the other or both of you can respond. Just to begin, I think that to make sure that people are not confused, and there may indeed be some confusion, particularly between Medicaid and Medicare, we should just one of you should just talk a little bit about Medicaid and what it is, and particularly who it is. Who is this program for?
I'll start. Medicaid is mostly for low-income persons and the non-elderly. It was primarily targeted at children and families who are on the what used to be called the AFDC program, now TANF, commonly known as welfare. So but that's what it was created for and originally. And then it's been expanded since that time to cover children, mostly children. Medicaid's primarily focused on children and mothers of children who are low income. And Medicaid also covers, however, there's a group of elderly citizens who are poor who are covered by Medicaid, too, and they're called the dual eligible. And But Medicaid is really focused on low-income people and mostly on children and mothers of children.
Mm-hmm. And I guess what's important here for people to understand is that while this is a program that's aimed at the poor, that simply being poor, it does not necessarily qualify you. And now there may be some, now with the economic stimulus plan, there may be some change in this. But sort of, it's my understanding that, at least in the past, healthy adults who did not have children, generally speaking, did not qualify.
That's correct. Right. You had to have a child and be poor. And even in some instances, the children in a family will be covered and the adults will not be covered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very common, actually, because the Medicaid and the state children's health insurance program, SCHIP, or what in Illinois we call All Kids. Mm-hmm. That covers only the children in the family, not the adults.
Yeah.
Although in Illinois, again, which has been quite expansive and it's Medicaid and SCHIP, they have a program called Family Care that allows the parents in those families to be covered also if their income qualifies.
Well, maybe, I don't know, Professor Lasasa, you want to add something onto this. Maybe another question here would be, as far as the federal government is concerned, are there certain individuals that states must cover, and then after that, if states want to have additional coverage, they can, but essentially that's up to them?
Well, that's correct. There is a Medicaid, as mentioned, is a shared federal-state program, but there are federal mandates for minimum income eligibility thresholds, which are in the range of about 200% of poverty, of the federal poverty level, which is about 200% would be about $36,000 or so dollars for a family of four per year, and a variety of other requirements. The financing of the program might also be of some interest.
Mm-hmm.
The federal Medicaid, or what's called the FMAP, the Federal Medical Assistance Percentage. This is the share of Medicaid dollars that are given by the federal government to states. It's been about 50% in Illinois, but the recent proposal is to increase that to closer to actually a little over 60%. Which means that, I mean, this works both ways, though, because this, on the one hand, doesn't necessarily give as much incentive for states to try to be a little more frugal in the types of benefit packages that they offer their enrollees, because, in a sense, you spend another dollar for your Medicaid enrollee, and the government's picking up 50 or now 60% on the dollar. So that can, on the one hand, let you have more generous benefits, but on the other hand, that those generous benefits do cost money and create an ongoing obligation for states that eventually have to be reckoned with.
And what is the total budget for Medicaid?
Illinois, it's approximately $10 billion of spending.
And for the, do you know what it is for the entire country?
Oh, that's, I think that's closer to 100 and...
No, 400 billion.
Yeah. 400 billion. 400.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of money.
Well, Medicaid is overtaking Medicare. Medicare used to be the largest government medical health insurance program, but now Medicaid is rivaling it and taking it over in terms of total dollars spent. By government, mm-hmm. but again, it's a federal and state combined.
And in my understanding, in a lot of states, that may well, in fact, be now their biggest expense.
Usually it's about, I think in Illinois, I've written on this, one out of every four tax revenue dollars goes to Medicaid in mm-hmm. Illinois now. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to kind of calculate what's it costing us. So one out of every $4 that the state raises in tax revenues, that goes to just pay for Medicaid.
Very quickly, let me introduce again the guests for this morning's first hour of Focus 580. Robert Kessner, he's professor of economics at the U of I Chicago. He's also a member of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And Anthony Lasasso, he is associate professor and senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at U of I Chicago in the School of Public Health, and is also affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And we're talking about Medicaid. And if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, it certainly, I think the reason for our wanting to have this conversation is to talk about how the burden on Medicaid just quite recently has gone up. The figure that I used at the beginning was I came across in my reading was that now it's something like 59 million people who are covered or being covered. And it was not all that long ago on this program that we talked about this. And at that point, according to the notes that I had, the number was 55 million. So can you say something about how the numbers of people being covered by Medicaid, or at least the people who are looking for help from Medicaid, has gone up just maybe within the last year or two?
Well, of course, Medicaid being a program for low-income individuals is somewhat cyclical in the sense that enrollments tend to rise when there's an economic downturn as more people experience income loss associated with joblessness. So that's certainly a factor.
So that is obviously what's happened here, the economy with the downturn in the economy, people lose the jobs, they also lose health care. That means that that indeed this may be the only place that they have to turn to try to get help, and if not for them, that at least for their children.
Right. That's certainly true for their children and even for them, because the only other alternative is the COBRA program, which allows you to buy the health insurance that you were receiving at your employer. Hmm. But you have to pay, that's very expensive because you actually pay 102% of what the employer was paying, and there's no discount, so many families can't afford to even continue that coverage.
Although we should point out, I suppose, that the newly signed stimulus package does include changes to the COBRA benefits that make, that I think both lengthen the time frame of COBRA eligibility after job separation and reduce the payments, essentially mm-hmm. subsidize the payments.
I mean, the other thing about the stimulus bill is for Illinois is going to get somewhere around $3 billion just for the Medicaid program in the way that Professor Lasasso had explained, by increasing what the federal government, the share of the federal government. So that'll be a $3 billion increase for the state to use to maintain its spending levels on Medicaid. So the local downturn in the economy here doesn't force the state to cut back. And just as you said, David, at a time when more and more people are looking for the benefit.
Yeah. Well, I think this is an important point to make, that before the economic stimulus plan passed, there were a lot of states where they're having a lot of trouble with their Medicaid obligations, and that more and more people were showing up asking for benefits. And so what states, they were doing a number of things, but they also were either talking about or actually dropping people from coverage. And I'm sure that they turned to the federal government and said, look, we have a really serious problem here. The numbers of people who are looking for help have gone up. We're going to have help from you. So now if you look at the money that's been set aside and it's significant amount of money across the country from the economic stimulus plan, is that how helpful will that be, and will it still be the case that some states are going to have to cut back on the kind of health services that they're paying for?
Well, it'll be very helpful to allow states to cut back less than they otherwise would, but some states are facing, big fiscal problems. I mean, Illinois, one of the big problems with Illinois is that they expanded the Medicaid and SCHIP programs pretty much in the forefront of the country in terms of the number of people they made eligible to be covered. But they really didn't fund the program sufficiently, so there's this very big backlog of payments to providers. So providers are owed, various estimates are bandied around, but somewhere around $4 billion the state is in debt to providers for care already received. So, that would be a typical issue. So a lot of states, the way they kind of balance their budget is by withholding payments to providers or not raising payments. So over time, the reimbursement that providers receive is eroded by inflation.
Well, just we've talked about the fact that now under the economic stimulus plan, states are going to be getting some money to help pay their Medicaid obligations. You just talked about, Professor Kestner, you just talked about the fact that here, as far as that is concerned, here in Illinois, we're already $4 billion in debt. So how much money is the state of Illinois going to get?
Well, some estimate I've seen recently is about $4 billion, but I think that's over 2 years, $2 billion a year. And that will certainly help, maintain the current levels of the program. But the state's own fiscal problems are probably will necessitate, if we want to deal seriously with them, some further attention in the Medicaid and SCHIP programs, meaning cuts. But
well, I think it's important here not to paper over the fact that many of these state budget problems are very much of the state's own making. I mean, there certainly is a big factor that you cannot dismiss the economic climate of the country. But at the same time, states have been, as Professor Kestner mentioned, like Illinois, have been really increasing benefit generosity level, perhaps too much over the past several years during the boom time, and now that we've hit the brakes economically, there's a reckoning, I think, in the making, and I think it's reasonable to fear that perhaps this bailout, if you will, of state Medicaid programs that is part of the stimulus bill may only push the reckoning a few years out into the future. I mean, I think Illinois missed a real opportunity a few years back when it was considering ways of making, I think, as Professor Kestner mentioned, more fundamental changes to the Medicaid program that could get it on a more firm financial footing for the years to come. And instead, it opted for what's called a primary care case management regime, which the best literature to date really suggests that this is not a cost-effective way of dealing with health care spending over the long term. I think Illinois they missed an opportunity several years ago to do more in this regard, to deal with the structural problems of what's inherently a fee-for-service system. You go to the doctor, a bill gets generated, a doctor gets paid, a service, of course, is rendered. And as Professor Kestner mentioned, Illinois has taken the strategy of just lengthening the time during which the bill gets paid as not really the best long-term strategy for viable healthcare finance. Yeah.
Well, just to pick up on that question, I'm sure it is the case here and probably the case elsewhere in the country that there may be a growing number of doctors that simply won't participate. I'm sure for a long time it's been the case that the payments that they get don't really cover the cost of the service. But if they have to wait and wait and wait and wait to be reimbursed, I'm sure that there are probably doctors who said, look, I just can't do this because I cannot stay in business. I can't afford to wait. I have to wait 6 months or 9 months or however long it is until I get reimbursed for the service that I've rendered.
Yeah, and I think, David, the problem is particularly acute for specialists, where the gap between the reimbursement and cost is the greatest. So I think there's a lot of advocates out in the community who argue that children on Medicaid who need specialist services have to wait a long time, very difficult to find them, and this may adversely affect their health. It stems from a problem of creating a program that is really beyond the means of the state to pay for, given current revenues, and wanting to have both things. We want to have a very generous program covering a lot of people, but we don't want to pay for it, and that just sets up a natural tension that the state has ignored, for the last several years.
Well, just a moment ago, Professor LaSalle, you were talking about the fact that there might have been an opportunity in the past to change the way we do things, and that would result in some savings. Sort of setting that aside and saving the question of what might be done or what other states are doing to try to reduce their costs, then it really does, though, bring us back to this question: well, if we're already $4 billion in debt, we get $4 billion, so that's a wash. But then what happens after that? Do you think that it's likely that the state is going to – it seems unlikely that we're going to find new sources of revenue. So I suppose then the other side is that means that the state's not going to be able to continue to provide the level of service. Will there be cutbacks, do you think?
Well, I think there simply has to be. I mean, the alternatives are – I mean, that's an unappealing alternative, but probably the other options may very well be worse. I mean, I think there's something to be learned from what's happening in California. This is a state – and, of course, the problems are not strictly healthcare related, but a big chunk of those problems are $42 billion deficit for for the state of California, and they've opted for raising taxes to the highest levels in the nation to solve their problem. I mean, that's for many an unappealing option, but certainly you look to, say, Hawaii, who achieved a great deal of acclaim, I think, in recent years for extending benefits, public benefits, to all children, and had to actually step back from that and reduce eligibility levels as the financing was just simply not there for it. So states have had to deal with the consequences of their actions in various ways. It's impossible to predict. In Illinois, in particular, it's impossible to predict the future here. But something will clearly have to be done.
Yeah, I suppose it's cold comfort, but one can see that while our deficit here is only $9 billion, there are states that where their problem is much, much bigger, and probably one of those that comes up over and over again, it would be the state of California, just because it is enormous, certainly compared to others, ours and others.
But, you know, I mean, here, let me get to the crux of the problem, where the kind of the tension, and maybe to raise a little controversy. I mean, in Illinois, right now, for example, let's take a family of four with two children. The family makes $60,000 of gross income. Illinois allows the two parents of that family to basically buy health insurance through the Medicaid program for somewhere around $2,000 a year. So they're paying $2,000 out of the gross income of $60,000. So that's 5% of their income. Is going for health insurance. $2,000 is not a bad deal for, and the kids are covered under the Medicaid program. So, you know, but among people who make $60,000 a year, 90% of them have private health insurance. So now the state creates a program for people making $60,000 a year. 9 out of 10 of them have private health insurance and probably have to pay more than $2,000 a year. So that creates an opportunity for many families who are working hard, doing the right thing, to say, hey, why shouldn't I take advantage of this government program? And they'll migrate out of their employer-sponsored insurance into the public program. This will raise the cost to Illinois and encourage people who are just working hard, doing the right thing, yes, struggling with $2,000, you know, making health insurance payments through their employer, to seek out the government program.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that point that Professor Kestner made, I think the best evidence to date regarding the SCHIP expansions that we've mentioned previously are that of every two families that are enrolled in the SCHIP program, one of those two families had prior private health insurance coverage, employer-sponsored health insurance coverage, typically.
So did I hear half, you're saying?
Half. Yes. So the crowd out, as the term is the term is commonly that is thrown about, is at least 50%. And certainly as you go up the income distribution, you can only expect that crowd out, private, you know, substitution of public insurance for private insurance will be greater, and that's pretty much what the evidence has shown to date in the literature.
We're in our midpoint of this part of Focus 580, and just very quickly, again, let me introduce our guest. The last person you heard, that's Anthony Lasasso. He is Associate Professor, Senior Research Scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the University of Illinois Chicago School of Public Health. Robert Kestner, also with us. He's Professor in the U of I Chicago's Department of Economics. Both of them are affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and both have done writing and research on Medicaid and other aspects of healthcare here in the United States. And we're talking about Medicaid. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. We have a couple of callers here, and let's talk with someone in Elburn up in Kane County. Line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Great topic. My family lives in California, actually. I think I'm the lone guy out. But thank God for that. I don't know, you know, with Illinois politics. But what I was going to say is the welfare system is broken out there, and they are taking money out of the healthcare system to pay for a lot of this. I mean, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger came out and said this weekend there's going to be a tax on income. There's going to be tax on, you know, they're talking about putting taxes now for mileage. And a lot of it has to do, what he was explaining, from what I understand, has to do to try and pay for healthcare benefits children welfare benefits. And the reason I say this is I'm a native Californian. I've been out here for a while. But I can tell you flat out that there are so many entities that want that money from the state out there. And I think this is part of the reason why we're in the state in the first place, is because of the fact that everybody wants something out there. Every group has to have something from some entity out there has to have money from the state. And where's the money going to come from? The more people you add to this, well, to the Medicare situation, the worse it gets. And it keeps getting, it's like the Social Security, it keeps dwindling down to smaller and smaller bits. I'm just wondering, is there like a simple solution to this? Like an even keel for, can we make it so maybe certain people, certain individuals, proven they only make certain amounts of money a year, or, you know, they've been here for a certain amount of years? I think, and the reason I'm aiming this towards a lot of illegals who come through here. And I'm not just picking on one kind of illegal. I'm just thinking, it just seems there are too many people out there getting freebies.
David, this is a good question. It brings up a lot of issues that really need to be clarified very clearly. And one is that if you're an undocumented resident and you're not a legal resident of the United States, you're not eligible for Medicaid, and you do not receive Medicaid in Illinois. That's the first point. Most states all the states have that provision. So people who are illegally residing in Illinois and other states don't receive Medicaid. They're not eligible for it. That's the first thing. Two is that in some states it's very burdensome to maintain your eligibility in Medicaid. They really do check income statements, assets, tax returns. They really make people jump through hoops, and the evidence suggests that making them jump through hoops really doesn't catch much cheaters. It just encourages people who, are rightfully belong on the roll on Medicaid in the program to find the administrative burden too high and not be enrolled. That thing. Now, the question is there an easy solution? I'd probably have made a lot more money if there was an easy solution. I don't think there is an easy solution. But one solution is the state and all states, and this is why health care reform in California and Illinois failed, because just as the caller said, it's going to, at the state level, you have to raise taxes significantly to expand health insurance further. I mean, we just are really, health insurance is a very expensive program, and to expand it further comes at the expense of tax increases given the current program. Now, a very radical alternative that some states have even tried is to make the program much more of a what we call catastrophic type of program. Give everybody coverage. If you have a serious injury or illness that puts you in the hospital, you're covered. But make the program a little less generous in terms of the other types of care.
All right. Well, let's go on to another call here. We'll go to line number one, which is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Yes. I was calling about something else, but to comment on the recent caller's comments. The simple fix in California is a sane tax law that doesn't demand a two-thirds majority of the California legislature to raise taxes. It's made it impossible for California to tax sufficiently to pay for programs, including education. And I would hazard the guess that few state legislatures have two-thirds of their membership sane and competent, which leaves the remaining third plus who are not competent or sane quite frequently, able to block any reasonable legislation. But what I really had called to say was to suggest that health insurance really isn't something the states can handle, that it should be national. States that do a very good job of providing for their citizens protection are at a competitive disadvantage to the states which do very little. Witness Louisiana's governor, who says he doesn't want to take any of the money being offered at present because he'd have to raise taxes. It seems to me that we need a national program that evens the field.
All right. Well, that's. I'm sure that there are a lot of people who would agree. This does get us toward a question that I wanted to have you both talk a little bit about, and that is, it's a broader kind of health topic. But given what President Obama has said about his priorities for health care, do you see anything that would that has been done? Now, for example, one of the things I wanted to ask, I thought I might ask Professor LoSasso, because you've written, I know, about S-CHIP. One of the things that happened earlier this month is the president signed into law an expansion of the program at additional money, billions of dollars, millions of kids more covered. And a lot of people, I think the reaction here broke along party lines, and a lot of Republicans are saying, well, this is just the first step on the road to national health. Do you think, in fact, that that is where the president, at least in his mind, where he would like us to go?
It's certainly something that the president has expressed his support of in general. The complexity of the specifics are always a bit mysterious. I mean, I'm not sure that I think that. The S-CHIP expansion that was enacted is necessarily the road to national health insurance. I mean, it's a relatively modest expansion, but nonetheless, I mean, I think the points I made earlier still apply to it. That it just continues on up the income distribution, and so where there are just very simply more privately insured enrollees, so you're trying to. Really kind of thread the needle, essentially, between people who already have private health insurance and the ever kind of shrinking, just nationally speaking, the sort of shrinking percentage of this income group, as you go up towards closing in on 300% of poverty, as Professor Kessner mentioned earlier. I mean, you get to $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year. That's not bad salary. But I guess back to at least I want to respond, I guess, to some of the previous callers' remarks. I mean, not voicing any opinion about the sanity of various state legislatures, but I think it's reasonable to take some comfort, I guess, from maybe a law passed in the mid '90s. That Professor Kessner mentioned earlier, TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. That's what welfare became, and it did. That was a dramatic law change that President Clinton signed into law in '96, and it changed the financing for welfare, what had been AFDC, to a block grant mechanism, not the kind of matching rate. That is, as I've already mentioned, the common in Medicaid, and instituted time limits, and indeed, lo and behold, welfare caseloads fell dramatically, and are still down significantly from the time prior to the passage of that law. Now, I'm not necessarily advocating such a radical change for Medicaid, but I mean there are some lessons that can be learned from that program.
Professor Kessner, anything you want to?
Well, I agree with the caller that the solution is national. Several states have tried the state option to expand coverage to all their citizens. Massachusetts, California, Illinois. Massachusetts actually passed the bill, but it hasn't become fully implemented yet because of budget shortfalls. Illinois basically failed the reform here. The reform failed here because of lack of willingness to raise taxes enough, and California the same reason. So it is, but and Governor I mean, President Obama wants to expand health insurance. Eventually, I think the Democrats and he would like to see a national universal system. But, you know, there's no – it's still a basic problem between cost and benefits. I mean, no one's willing to pay for what it's going to cost to get a national system in terms of higher taxes. And no one's also willing to consider a different type of system that isn't as generous and encompassing as what they bandy about. So.
Okay, well, let's go on here. We'll have some other callers. And next we'll talk with somebody in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
If I could go back a little bit, I was just wondering what percentage of people who switched from employer health insurance to family / kid care had recently lost jobs? I guess that would be my first question, if I could ask a couple more here. And on the catastrophic insurance, you mentioned some of the states you're going to, that just, I don't have any numbers, of course, but that just seems like in the long run it's going to cost worse. We're going to have so many people out there with uncontrolled chronic diseases, and then they're going to end up, you know, with amputations or, you know, kidney failure and all these other things, and we're going to end up paying for that in the end. All right, those are my two questions, if you would, callers wouldn't mind commenting on them.
Sure.
I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay.
I would just, I'll just make a brief comment on your second point there about catastrophic health insurance as a concept. Sort of, I think we as a nation perhaps have collectively forgotten what the purpose of insurance, generally speaking, is. Insurance is to serve to indemnify us against financial risk. And I'll just briefly comment and say that, you know, we don't buy automobile insurance in order to become a better driver. We buy it so we don't have to pay out of pocket if we get into a car accident. We don't have to pay the repairs out of pocket. And I think that a lot of us have forgotten that the primary function of insurance is a financial one. It's not necessarily to get healthy. Health status is determined by umpteen things, but most of them being lifestyle and behavioral factors, I would argue.
Well, I'm sure, though, that the caller would say, maybe other people would say, well, but if we're going to pay something, if we're going to decide that we're going to provide health care to some people, would it not make more sense to make sure that we're providing basic kinds of care, basic kinds of screenings, that we do check people's cholesterol, that we do mammograms, that we provide prenatal care to pregnant women, and we provide health care to children? The idea being that if we can do something to at least maintain people's health, then later on, we're not going to maybe we won't have as much cancer, diabetes, heart disease, what have you.
I think this is a great issue and an interesting one. You just ticked off a few things. Cholesterol screening is probably a waste of a lot of money. That would be my first kind of response. Now, there's very few things in terms of prevention that are actually been shown to be cost-effective. Mammography is one for the women of the right age. I think a colonoscopy is another proven winner for people of the right age. Prenatal care has been shown to be a pretty inefficient and costly way of, there's no reason to have 14 prenatal care visits. Four is probably fine. Mm-hmm. So many of these things, I mean, there's a widespread impression out there that if only people could get primary care, they wouldn't end up in the hospital. All the evidence suggests that the more you go to primary care, the more you end up in the hospital. And, it's a little tricky to figure out which way, what causes what, but there's really very little evidence that, you know, the real problem in our healthcare system is people aren't getting to the doctor soon enough to be healthy. That's not the problem. The problem is people, you know, as Professor Lasasa said, a lot of people, the lifestyle behaviors are really still a problem in our society. People with congenital illnesses, cancers, they're going to need treatment. They're going to become very ill, and that's mostly a genetic problem. And catastrophic care will take care of them. under these circumstances. And then, you know, many people, there's nobody, you know, we're talking a relatively small part of the population, and I think everyone would be willing to cover them for these kind of services that can't afford a mammography, that can't afford a colonoscopy, you know, that can't afford the really, truly effective preventive measures. And for those people who can't afford that, then I think, you know, we could definitely have a program to pay for that. It's just going from there to just getting an endless entitlement to all kinds of services that are of low quality and low value is where we run into trouble.
Mm. Just to try to pick up, and we're really getting short on time, and I have a number of other calls, but sorry. You try to pick up on the other question the caller asked. I think we did talk a little bit earlier about the fact that in the last year or two, the numbers of people on the Medicaid rolls across the country have gone up, and that that is due to the fact that there were people who had jobs that, with health coverage who then lost their jobs and lost their health coverage. Correct?
Yes, no, I think so. I don't think when I think Professor Lasasso commented before on the issue that one out of every two families that were enrolled in Medicaid came from private insurance.
And well, that's another. Yes, there are some people apparently who had private insurance, but who found it to their advantage financially to actually sign up for Medicaid.
Right. I think when he can correct me when he. Refer to that figure. That accounts for the fact that does not include people who lost their job and became uninsured.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm afraid I don't have the exact figures for Illinois that the caller wanted.
Just to go back to a point an earlier caller made. I mean, why not make a restriction that says if you have employer provided health care, that you're not eligible for Medicaid. That's not what it's for.
Well, that is precisely what they do, but it's just very hard to operationalize that. And the more stringent that these anti crowd out procedures, the more stringent that they make them, it really just succeeds in lowering the take up rate of the program, and at the same time lowering the extent of crowd out. But you end up enrolling just in general fewer people, considerably fewer people. The SCHIP legislation, as it was originally passed, did include precisely the kinds of measures. It, in fact, forced states to come up with some kind of an anti-crowd out. And, you know, I guess I'm saying that it didn't work.
Yeah. We have about 6-7 minutes left just to introduce again our guests for anybody who has tuned in the last 15 or 20 minutes or so. Both of our guests are economists. They're both on the faculty of University of Illinois at Chicago. Bob Kestner is an economist, and Anthony Lasasso is associate professor, senior research scientist in the Division of Health Policy and Administration at the School of Public Health there, and they're both affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. We're talking about Medicaid, and we have several callers, and we'll try to get in as many as we can in the time that remains. Next caller is in Chicago on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Yes. A quick question. One, what percentage of the Medicaid dollars are being spent for nursing home care? And the other is, what is the evidence of population migration from state to state based on the relative quality of the Medicaid programs?
I'll answer those quickly. One-third and minimal.
Thank you.
All right. So a third, that's a pretty big chunk. So a third of Medicaid is going to provide nursing home care.
For
low-income elderly people.
Right.
Is that something that anybody is really talking about as being something that now is not only a considerable cost now, but something we're expecting to go up in the future?
People are absolutely very concerned about that. I mean, because that's one-third of the dollars, but it's far fewer than one-third of the people, far, far fewer. Might be closer to one-tenth of the people, I'm not exactly sure the figure there. They're very expensive.
The per-person cost is very high.
Considerably higher. These are Medicaid people generally living in nursing homes, very costly.
All right. Savoy is next, line 3. Hello.
Hello, this is Belgium.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've gone out of order here. Well, please go ahead. We did have somebody for. Anyway, go ahead.
Thing I'd like to point out is there's various types of insurance. I'm sure you people know about. If you work for a very a Progressive company, you get very good insurance. If you work self-employed, such as myself, you have to provide your own. If you're poor, you have none. But probably the most spectacular insurance of all is the insurance that our federal government gives, I know at least commissioned officers and the people in Congress. It's called TRICARE, TRIGUARD. It pays for everything, no matter what it is. It's amazing insurance. It seems like there's a sure disparity between who gets care and who doesn't. Shouldn't this, maybe nationalization would take care of part of this?
I think nationalization would bring to a head the tension that exists between trying to provide the type of generous, what you call very good coverage, and providing it for all people. Right now, we haven't shown a willingness to pay for all people with that type of coverage. So, for example, Medicaid, which is the low income, is a very generous program, as generous as the one you've referred to. People on Medicaid don't pay anything for prescription drugs, or they pay $0 for all their treatments. But the way that's a very cheap program because the government, the states, pay providers very little for everything.
All right. Well, let's go on here to next caller. This is Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hi. I'd like to get back to an issue that was brought up and answered, but I think left something out. Someone brought up the question about undocumented or illegal aliens, and you were saying they're not covered by Medicaid, but they are treated in lots of hospitals, let's say in California, which is where that discussion began, and therefore the unabsorbed costs then get shifted into the broader cost of the hospital, and then therefore the amounts that they bill Medicaid, et cetera, have to absorb all of that. So in a sense, that is part of what we have to cover and figure out a way to deal with, because as soon as we say everyone has to be able to have treatment, someone is going to have to end up paying for that. So I wanted to know if there's been any economic or other analysis and exploration of this.
I think the point is very relevant for Illinois, because Illinois is a large immigrant state with a significant number of people who are undocumented. And here in Chicago, when they walk into Stroger Hospital, or Crook County Hospital, their care is basically picked up by the taxpayer, some taxpayer or the private payer. So there is this kind of cost shift, what you're talking about, that goes on. Right now that's made up through special payments to these hospitals for this type of care, but it's a very inefficient way to do it. Again, if we move to a more universal system, whether we cover people who are residing here illegally or not, it's just more of a value judgment about whether we want to spend the money on people same as citizens.
Does that get at your question?
Yeah, it gets at my question, but also gets at the point that this sort of extends the reality of the costs that Medicaid has to cover, because the prices on everything else go up because of what's not paid.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go on to at least one more caller here, and that would be Savoy, line number.
Late, but I've never heard anyone discuss this. The problem of huge expenses going to certain huge procedures, such as somebody who's used a lot of drugs over the years, and now then somebody wants to give them a liver transplant, or the amount of money that's racked up in Chicago hospitals, where guys come in from their drug wars and they're shot up and they're on their second or third round of major surgery with major rehab. These are tremendous costs, and until you deal with that, I'm certainly not going to be in favor of any national health insurance program. And my second point is, if you had a separate program to pay the nursing home bills for those people, and that freed up, I think you said it was a third of the money, would that, at least for a goodly amount of time, solve the problems of money for regular care?
Well, I'm not sure about, you know, somebody would have to pay for the separate program, of course. So, I mean, you can call it something else, but you're still talking about, you know, nationally
$120 billion of Medicaid dollars that are going for long-term care. The other point that you raised about, I'm not confident that those types of incidents that you mentioned, though they are certainly they're certainly there. I don't think that collectively that type of care really amounts to a great deal in the grand scheme of the $2 trillion that we spend nationally on health care.
We're at the point where we're going to have to finish, and maybe each of you quickly, this does indeed get us back to the big point. We're spending an enormous amount of money on health care in this country. Per person we spend more, we're not necessarily healthier, but per person we spend more than a lot of industrialized societies, and we have all these people who don't have any coverage at all. Do you think that in the coming years, in the next decade or so, that we're likely to make much progress on either of those? Professor LaSalle, so you can go first.
That is the big question. I mean, my best prediction would probably be that we'll continue to nibble around the edges and probably incrementally reduce the number of uninsured, most likely. I don't see us spending less, though. I see us continuing to spend more, both on a per capita basis and, of course, in absolute dollars.
Yeah. Professor Kessner?
I agree that I think we're going to muddle through as we have in the last couple of decades, and then as when the cost pressures rise sufficiently, we'll start to implement explicit types of rationing as we see in some European countries.
Well, there we're going to have to leave it. I'm sure we can come back to this on another day. For the moment, we want to say, Professor Kessner, thank you very much.
Thank you.
He's an economist, U of I Chicago, and Professor LaSasso, thank you.
My pleasure.
He is associate professor at the U of I of Chicago School of Public Health.